We are starting a series on relationships that honor God. And so this is how I always start this series, because I think it's really important. Because sometimes we can get uncomfortable talking about relationships and sex when we're in a group of people. And I know, because I was your age one time and I was like, what is going on? I don't want it. Blah, 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 right? And I was a junior high boy at one time, believe it or not. And that is my experience. So I'm starting off by telling you a little bit of my personal story. Here's some of the questions that I had. And one of the reasons that I developed this series like years and years and years ago was because I didn't have anyone to answer the questions. And so you can't even imagine. But I'll try to help you, bring you back. Okay, so we had a computer. There's no color. It was just a screen. And it was this—I don't remember what it was. I think a big box or something. And it had this game, and it was like you ask a question. It was like a therapist. You're like, that's the lamest thing ever. It was so awesome back then. Oh, it talks to me, man. This is awesome. And so, like, I just had no one to ask these questions about, or questions to, about sex and about relationships. I didn't know anything. And so I'm typing stuff into this computer, asking this computer this dumb game about sex, right? And of course it didn't have any answers, because it was such a simple program. All it does is it rephrases what you're asking and then kind of spits out some kind of thing, and you're like, but it doesn't give you any answers, it's making you answer, right? And I'm like, but I don't know, right? And so I just didn't have anyone to talk to, and like my parents never really talked to me about it, except for one situation that did not help. So my dad decided that my brother and I, who's 11 months younger than me, so we did everything together, needed to have the talk about sex. And so the birds and the bees is affectionately known in our culture. I don't know why. Anyway, so he calls my brother and I over to the couch, and then he proceeds to tell us about sex. And I'm like looking at him going like, I didn't know what he's talking about. Like, I was probably grade 7, about 6 or 7, 12, 13 years old. And he's making hand gestures, and he's like he's going like this, and men have a penis and girls have a vagina, and he didn't use those words, so we didn't have no clue what he's talking about, right? And like, we're just, after, I don't know, it was a very awkward 15 minutes. I think that was about it. I don't remember the exact time, but I remember after looking to my brother going like, do you know what he's talking about? And my brother's going like, nope. We had no clue what he was actually telling us about. And so anyway, my dad, I love my dad. He's an awesome dude. But you know what? There was a problem in the church 30 some years ago that still exists, and it's called silence. Sometimes the response of the Christian community to these types of questions is silence. And we did it for a number of different things, gender and sexuality, and we just didn't talk about it because it makes people uncomfortable. So we're like, oh, we don't want to talk about it. But the problem with not talking about it is eventually it becomes a major issue, and you have no tools in your toolbox to try and tackle that issue. And so it's one of the reasons why, in fact, I've had pushback from parents going like, my kids are too young for this. And I disagree, because I think to hear it from here first, when you're uncomfortable with it and you don't know, have a clue about anything, is the best time to hear it. Because it's, because at some point in the very near future, so if you're in grade 7 or 8, at some point in the very near future, I'm saying the next 2 to 3 years, you're going to go through quite a few changes in your cognitively, your brain, okay, your mind. You're going to start thinking differently. You're going to start seeing boys, and you're going to start seeing girls differently, for those of you who are really young. For those of you who are older, you're snickering because you've already, are you either right in the middle of it, or you've already kind of went through that stage going like, yeah, it's really weird. All of a sudden, the things that grossed you out, you're kind of drawn to. And it's just kind of like, what just happened? And so this is one of the reasons why I push back on parents going like, hey guys, this is really important. My kids are going to and I hear it too. I think it's really important to hear this stuff because silence is never, pretending it doesn't exist, is never a good option. Because at some point, your kids are going to have, you guys, are going to have those conversations with friends, teachers. It's going to happen. Those feelings for either a boy or a girl are going to happen. You're going to start having those attractions, and you can't do anything about it. Those attractions are going to come, and they aren't because you've decided to be attracted to people, right? It just doesn't happen that way. They are not things that you control. Attraction is something that happens to you, not something that you decide to do. And so that's going to start happening in your life. So that's why we tackle this series every 2 years. Now, for those of you who are older and have been through this series a couple times or maybe once before, one of the reasons, again, that we do this for the whole group is that in each stage of life, you will hear a different talk. Even though the talk will be the same material, mostly, I do revamp them every time. But each talk, you're going to hear something different because you're going to be in a different stage of life. You're going to view life differently. You're going to be seeing boys and girls, opposite sex, differently. You're going to have a lot more knowledge about these things. You're going to have different feelings. Your body will be different 2 years from now, guaranteed, right? It's just that's what happens. And so your mind is also more developed. And so if you're in grade 9, when right now, or grade 10, in 2 years, you'll be grade 11, 12, your mind will be much more developed, and you will hear something different. If you're in grade 7 or grade 8, in a couple of years, you'll be in grade 9 or grade 10, your mind will be completely different. It will be more developed. And so this talk is regenerated over and over, and because you'll hear something different at each stage. Now, the other thing that's really, really important, maybe the most important thing, and this is what we see in the Bible constantly, is God constantly reminds us of things that are important. And so this is why we have etched this into our calendar every 2 years, because we think this is important. And so here's some of the questions that I had. Why does God want us to wait until marriage for sex? That was one of the questions. That wasn't a question in grade 7, but that definitely was a question when I was in high school. Why did God make it so hard to wait? That was the other thing. Like, this is crazy. This doesn't seem right. Like, why is it so difficult? If I'm not supposed to have sex until I'm married, why does my body say yes? I put all of the time. That's not even right. It shouldn't be all the time. A lot of the time, right? Not all of the time. Ah. So these are the questions that I had. It was met with silence from the church. I didn't have an outlet for it. Our youth group didn't ever do a series like this. We never talked about relationships, and we never talked about sex. We never talked about any of that stuff. And I'll get to why in a minute here. Another reason is because when I became a dad, I developed this series after Naya was born, actually, because I thought I want to create something that if my daughter or son or daughter was in it, this is the most important information that they would need to know. And so that's how it's designed. That's how this series is designed. And now my kids are actually in youth, so it's kind of awkward. Not as much for me as for them, but. Okay, so that's another reason. Here's probably one of the biggest reasons, is that I feel sometimes like our culture is like a freight train, and it's hurtling down the tracks, and our students are all standing on the tracks, and they're kind of looking around. They don't see the train. That's how I feel sometimes as a youth pastor, and my youth leaders have heard me talk about this. Here's the reality of it. That is an accurate picture as long as God isn't involved, right? But God is involved. And so a hurtling freight train is pretty minuscule compared to this amazing God who can just kind of like, you know, put his thumb there and the train would just buckle up, right? And I think stuff like this helps us. It helps us to become aware that the culture is really pushing hard, like really hard against the biblical view of relationship. Our culture doesn't want you to, when I say our culture, it's not just our culture, we have an enemy. The enemy is behind the push in our culture to steer us away from God's design. The enemy does not want us to do that because he knows that steering us away from God's design will destroy us. And so that's what he wants to do. The Bible's very clear that Satan, that's his goal, to kill, steal, and destroy. To steal, kill, and destroy is the... And we'll actually, we have that verse in a second here. And so my hope is that as you start those dating relationships, and not just those dating relationships, this is a question you should ask for every relationship that you have, including a relationship with your parents, relationships with your friends, is does this relationship honor God? And if so, what, how, right? It isn't just, yeah, it does, just because. You got to think about, okay, so how does a relationship honor God? So particular, and what we're going to talk about in the next 3 or 4 weeks or 4 or 5 weeks is the relationships between men and women. How does that relationship specifically, how can that relationship honor God? All right. So before we get into the actual text that we're getting into today, there's a biblical understanding of sex that we need to adopt. But before we adopt it, there is a few things that we need to go through. There's three in particular. There's first, there's a critical posture. And this is the question, do you really want to know what God says? Okay, you got to be honest about this. Because one of the things we see in the Bible is constant pushback, not just from the people who didn't like God, but from God's own people. He continually called his people rebellious and stiff-necked. Yet he continually offered himself to them. Like, come to me, come to me, come to me. I have life for you. You know, stop rejecting me. Stop worshiping idols. Stop doing this. But it was continually drift away from God. Not just a drift, an actual rebellion. And I love this passage because it gives us this beautiful picture of the rebellion against God. And this is found in Isaiah chapter 30, verses 8 to 11. Now go, so this is God speaking to Isaiah. Now go and write down these words. Write them in a book. They will stand until the end of time as a witness that these people are stubborn rebels who refuse to pay attention to the Lord's instructions. They tell the seers, stop seeing visions. They tell the prophets, don't tell us what is right. Tell us nice things. Tell us lies. Forget all this gloom. Get off the narrow path. Stop telling us about your Holy One. Stop confronting us with the Holy One of Israel. Okay, so this is the response of the people when God is coming to them through the prophet Isaiah, and Isaiah is preaching the word of God to them and telling them what God desires for them, and this is their pushback. Stop preaching that stuff. We do not want to hear the truth. It doesn't sound nice. What we want you to do is tell us good things about ourselves. Just good things. Don't tell it, and we don't care if it's true. Just tell us lies. Like, we're happy with that as long as you tell us good stuff. Okay? This is what the people of God are saying to the prophet. Isn't this crazy, you guys? Can you imagine? They're like, hold on. Okay, so let's say it's Ignite, and I'm like asking you this question. You need to have this critical posture. And halfway through this, all of you guys stand up and go like, whoa, 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 Pastor Chris. Hold on. We don't want to hear that. We want to hear nice stuff. We want to hear stuff that makes us happy about what we're doing and what we're getting into. Don't confront us with what the Bible says, what God desires, what he wants. Please. It's so old. It's so lame. It's like, it's not part of, you know, we're into 2019. We're way past that. Okay, that's the response that these people are making. In, of course, it wasn't 2019, but that's what they're doing. They're pushing back on like, don't preach from the Bible. And if you do, make sure it makes us look good. Okay? So that's the question. Do you have the posture? Are you willing to listen and understand what God has for you? Secondly, you need to have a vital perspective. Now we're going to go through these three things in each of our talks. And the reason why, and you guys might be just looking at there going like, if you don't have a foundation, if you don't believe these three things, you're going to have a really difficult time accepting what God says. Okay, so if you don't have this really critical posture where you're like, okay, I want to hear from God. Doesn't matter if it doesn't fit with what I believe or what I think or what is happening in the culture around me, I'm going to trust that God knows best. Okay, that's the posture. The second one is this perspective, and it comes from John 10:10, that Jesus has come to give you life to the full. He says, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, only to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. Okay, that's the promise. So to understand God's view of relationship and sexuality, we need to understand that he is the one who gives life. His way is the way to life and light and love and all the good stuff. The enemy's way is the shortcut, right? The enemy doesn't say that necessarily, oh, that's wrong, right? He just wants you to take a shortcut. Because that's almost always what the enemy's goal is to do as a Christian, because he knows you know the right thing, but he wants you to take a shortcut to get there, okay? And we'll develop that thought, and you might be going, what does that mean? We got a whole section coming up in another talk about that, okay? So that's the vital perspective, that we believe that what God says is important, not because he's trying to wreck our fun or not because he wants us to be like lame, old, boring people, but because he knows he's designed sexuality and he's designed relationship so that it'll benefit us and help us to flourish. Okay, lastly, we have this essential understanding for the purpose of your life. Okay, as a believer, so if you're a believer, if not, this is probably not your purpose, but if you've been coming for a little while and you're like, I'm close to being a believer, you're probably already starting to adopt this, that your purpose is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever, the chief purpose of man. Isn't that cool? That our chief purpose is to glorify God. So we bring him glory and we enjoy, I just love those words, and we get to enjoy him forever. Because believe it or not, God is ridiculously enjoyable. He really is. There's stuff in the Bible that says, taste and see how good God is. It's like, what? Taste God? What? Right? It's just like there's these, that like God's word is like honey on my lips. Right? There's all of these descriptive, this descriptive imagery that just draws us into this incredible God that's like, oh, like taste, smell, see, like all of our senses are involved in this incredible God. And it's because we get to enjoy him forever as believers. We never, ever stop enjoying him. So that's our purpose. So if you're wondering what the purpose of your life is, it's to bring glory to God. It's to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. That's a long time, right? How long is like 1,000 years? It seems like a long time. It seems like 1,000 years. And yet it's just the blink of an eye, the Bible says, right? 1,000 years is like a blink of the eye for God. That's eternity, right? That's how we see 1,000 years as being really long. God sees 1,000 years as a blink of the eye. That's how fast it is. It's like, whoa. Okay, so that is the foundation for this entire series, that we need this posture, and we need this perspective, and we need this understanding. Okay, so here's our biblical understanding of sex. There's kind of three categories to view sex. The first is a misconception. The second is a misconception. And the third is what I feel like God, the biblical perspective is. So number one, sex is not dirty. Okay, this is a common misconception, both in our culture and our church. Not this church, but the church. Let's say the church. Okay, that's a common misconception. So think of some of the songs like Dirty Deeds, Done Dirt Cheap. You guys probably don't know. This is my day, right? Right? There's this like, what's that new? Oh, there's a dirty, like, okay. So you guys understand, right? Our culture talks about sex dirty, like dirty girls or dirty whatever. They talk that way because there's this cultural perception somehow that sex is dirty and they like it. Okay? They like being dirty. They like the aspect of it. But there's also this perception in the church that as you grow up, that sex is dirty and it's bad, okay? So we want to get away from that. Sex is not dirty. Sex is not bad. There is not one place in the Bible that it talks about sex being dirty and bad, okay? Misusing sex outside of the way God's designed it is sinful and therefore bad. But sex itself is not bad, okay? So it's not dirty. That's a misconception. That is going into one of the extremes. So sometimes abuse or addiction can alter your view of sex. So if you have a real difficult, if you have difficulty with pornography, or if you have been through some sort of abuse, it makes it really difficult to view sex as something that is pure and good. That is... It becomes like a filter. You know what a filter, Like if you were to wear goggles and you put like a pink filter over, everything would look pink, right? So if we go skiing, right? If you have pink goggles, everything kind of looks a pinkish hue. And then after a while, what happens? You don't notice, right? You don't notice that it's pink until you take your goggles off and you're like, what? Everything's just white. And then, whoa. So what happens is you don't realize you're looking through this lens. And so if there's been abuse or bad, you had bad experiences in your past, you tend to view sex sometimes as dirty. Okay? The other kind of ditch, so if we have two ditches and a road, when we want to be on the road, so we have the ditch of sex being dirty. The other ditch is that people make sex God. They make it everything, right? And not just sex, relationships, right? So I'm just kind of talking specifically about sex, but we can make anything an idol. We can make anything more important than God, more important than Jesus. And so that's the ditch, and specifically what we're talking about, sex. Our culture worships sex. They do. That's why there's strip clubs. That's why there's, all of these pornography outlets, whether it's magazines or mostly internet. That's the big one, right? But it is like, it's ridiculous. And there's statistics that the pornography industry, okay, maybe I should explain what, for just in case you don't know what pornography is. So pornography is pictures or videos of naked people performing sexual acts, and there's different levels of it, okay? Yeah, or not even sexual acts, but sometimes just meant to entice you, right? So an image, just it doesn't have to be a bunch of people, it could be just one image, a single image that's meant to draw a sexual response from you. So that's pornography. Yeah, and it's all over the place. It's crazy. And I know as a parent, I'm always worried because I have a talk later about pornography, but the danger of pornography is just unbelievable. And we have helped students as young as grade 7 who are already completely addicted to get out of an addiction to pornography. So, yeah, like we had a young girl just probably about 10 years ago, grade 7, had been addicted to pornography for years already. In fact, she said she didn't even know what it was. She just clicked on a back on a browser. It went to a pornography site, and she said that's where she can actually pinpoint from that moment on. She had trouble. She would go back and back and back, and she was little. She was 7 or 8, something like that. That's why I'm just like, that's why I'm so protective of what my kids are seeing. Like that's how powerful pornography is. She didn't even know what it was, and it was drawing. Because there's something spiritual about pornography. It's not just physical stuff, you guys. There's something spiritual that draws you in and captures you, and you can't escape. And there's also some stuff that's happening physically in your body that anyway, I have a talk on porn that's coming. I'm not, I, but anyway, it is what causes that addiction. Okay, so that's, but that is, talking about pornography and talking about these things, that's how our culture worships sex. We see it in advertising, right? I mean, have you ever heard the phrase sex sells, right? Because, so that's why there is incredibly good-looking, very scantily clad people in commercials, right? That's part of what they're trying to do. It's just like TV shows, movies, like everything glorifies the sexual relationship. And so this is what our culture does, and this is what God is very much going like, don't do this, okay? Now, in a reaction to, and this is why I think the church's view of sex is often seen as dirty, is because in reaction to this fact, we're not going to make sex God. Like over to the other ditch and go like, we're gonna make sure it's dirty. Right? And that nobody, everyone feels terrible about it. And so that's not the answer that we have. And so the third, which is, I believe, the biblical response to the question of what is God's view of sex, is that sex is a gift. The biblical view of sex is that it is a gift from God for a man and a woman to enjoy in marriage. This is why God gave it. And we'll talk about the purpose of it in a few minutes. But this is the biblical view that this is, that God gave it to humans as a gift for them. The reason it is so powerful is because it's a divine gift. It's one of God's gifts to mankind, to humans. Okay? That's why there's so much power. That's why it's used in advertising and movies to draw people in. That's why pornography makes more than all of the professional sports leagues put together. In 1 year, pornography outdoes them all. It's pretty crazy. This is where we're going to go to end off our talk here. This is where I'm getting all of this stuff from, or most of it anyway, is from Genesis chapter 1. Okay? So, when we're talking about God's design for us, it's always important to go back to the beginning. This is where it all started. This is where the design began. Then God said, "Let the earth produce every sort of animal, each producing offspring of the same kind, livestock, small animals that scurry along the ground, and wild animals." And that is what happened. God made all sorts of wild animals, livestock and small animals, each able to produce offspring of the same kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, and all the wild animals on the earth, and the small animals that scurry along the ground." So God created human beings in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Now, this is really important. One of the reasons we did the identity series first was because I wanted you guys to remember, when we got to this point, that you are a masterpiece, that you are God's masterpiece, that you have been created specifically, that God put you together, that the way you were formed is, he just took great pleasure in it, and he takes great pleasure in you. It's really important. This is why it's so important that you treat your body well, that you treat others well, is because we actually are made in the image of God. It's incredible. This is one of the most important things you'll ever remember. This is where your value comes from. It's not the fact that you were born a human. It's the fact that you were born a human in the image of God. This, you guys want to wonder why our culture is often in so much despair? I'm not just talking about personal depression. I've gone through those. You guys can go through that. That's not what I'm talking about. But our culture as a whole is in incredible depression and despair, right? Part of it is because there's no purpose. Part of it is because they've rejected the idea that value comes from being created. And they've embraced the idea that somehow they just became from nothing, right? Some evolutionary process, which means, guys, this is important, which means you don't have any value. If you are just the product of a process like evolution, you don't have any value. How can you possibly have value? You are just like a bunch of cells that are put together that somehow can talk and think, right? This is why this is so important for us to understand when it comes to sexuality and anything in life. Your value comes from the fact, not the way you look, not because of what assets you have, not because of how much hair you have, not because of how muscular or how thin you are. That is not where your value comes. Doesn't come from how much money you make. Doesn't come from how popular you are. That is not your value. Your value comes from the fact that you were created in the image of the Almighty God who created everything. That's why human beings are valuable. That's why we don't kill humans. That's why in a family of 4 children and a dog, when money is tight and they have to let something go, it's not one of the kids, it's the dog, right? You don't let one of your kids go. You let the dog go, right? And our culture is getting pretty warped, and more we go towards the craziness of it. But we know that, right? We know there's more value in humans. And why? If it's just evolution, we can't claim somehow we're more valuable. But if we're created, and God created it in a specific order, well then, yeah. Well then, it's absurd to think that we're not more valuable. Okay, let's finish this off. Then God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground." One of the things that is really important to understand is that right from the beginning, sex was God's idea. Right from the very start. How in the world are human beings going to multiply and fill the earth? Right? Do we just kind of split? It's like, okay, here's a really sharp knife. Just split me down the middle, and now there's two of me, right? This doesn't work, right? So it's God's plan. It wasn't that God was just kind of like, okay, go and fill the earth, and then he turned away and walked away, came back a little while later, and he sees the man and the woman, and they're having sex, and he's like, bah! That's not what he did, right? He created them specifically to fill the earth. It's one of the mandates. So here's one of the things that's generally true, not completely always true, okay? Just a general truth is that the sex drive in a man is generally, not always, but generally stronger than in a female. And the reason, I think, is because of this command: be fruitful and multiply. So if one of the partners in a relationship, in a marriage relationship, if there wasn't at least one who had a strong sex drive, then we would not fill the earth and we would not multiply, right? Is that just logical? Are you with me on that? Okay, so whether you're a guy or a girl doesn't necessarily mean that your sex drive will be great or small, but generally we can say guys have a stronger sex drive, not always. Okay, the reason that is strong, the reason it is difficult, sexuality becomes very difficult, the reason that porn is so addictive, one of the reasons, and the reason that we're pulled toward these things is because we have strong sexual desires that were given to us by God. Okay, going back to one of those questions I asked right at the start, if God wanted us to wait, why do you make it so hard, so difficult? Because the command to fill the earth came with a strong drive. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it, right? He gave us the ability. Okay, so fill the earth. Now, the second part of this, fill the earth, is the second part is govern it. Okay, so you're talking about a mule. He's talking about govern the earth, that we actually have the ability to do those things, that God has given us the ability to create, because it's one of the, I think, one of the being created in his image. He's a creator. That's why humans have this ability to create. That's what we love. That's why there's people like Grace who are super creative, right? She's like really, really creative. Or my daughter's super creative too, but like, wait, so I'm comparing them to me. So maybe in the grand scope of things, they're not that creative. But compared to me, they are like monsters in creativeness, right? And so it's just like, but God does, that's part of the reflection of God's image in us. And so it's not just creativity. It's all of these other things that you have that God has given you that are a reflection of the image that he's placed in you. And he's given us the ability to govern it, to rule over it and subdue it in other translations. So he says, reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all, not some, but all the animals that scurry along the ground. So God gave dominion of the entire earth to humans, and he told them to go and fill the earth, multiply. Right? So obviously, sex was God's idea, and this is before human beings sinned, by the way. God gave this command before sin entered the world. So there's a belief out there that sex is the product of Adam and Eve sinning. In fact, there's even crazy beliefs that it was because they started having sex that they got booted out of the garden, which is ridiculous. Right? So I'm like, I don't know where that came from. I think it's probably from some crazy writing that somebody made up, right? But it's just nuts, right? But there is this perception that again, because people think the church's view of sex is negative and dirty, and it's not. That we don't believe that. We believe that sex is a gift to humans. Because it glorifies God. It really does. That's a really cool thing to think about. But it needs to be used in the way that he's designed it. All right, so that's where we'll stop for today. I'll do the second part of this talk next week. And it's the answering the question, why did God create sex? And we'll talk about where everything went wrong. Sound good?